Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi there, welcome to this week's Snugcast. I'm the host, DJ Walsh, and joined as ever by my co-host, Owen Tabb. Owen, how are you getting on this week?
Good, yeah. Better after hearing the lockdown news, the lockdown lift, as they say. Patent pending. Lockdown lift. Snugcast original there. TM. But yeah, Jesus, I thought that was great news. Like we'll have a pint in our hands, hopefully. This month, for those pubs that open as with a restaurant, not even a restaurant license that can serve food, have a kitchen in them, and then 20th of July, as you so masterfully called last week, DJ on the Pint Watch, for all pubs to be open. So yeah, I'm in a much better mood.
Yeah, it was a big shock to the system there, and I think I think people expected phase two to be initiated. I don't think anyone was really expecting like the level of escalation of the easing of lockdown in Ireland for listeners abroad. Basically, we've got a 5-phase lockdown that yesterday was shot into a 4-phase lockdown, which included like bringing essentially pubs that can serve food. Their lockdown easing forward by 6 weeks, actually, when you look at the original plans. So it was a really positive day for businesses. It was a really positive day for people who are looking for pubs, pints, and chats. It was also a really positive day for small and medium enterprises who are looking to get back up and running and back to some sort of normality as soon as possible. And it was announced yesterday that from Monday the 8th of June, all kind of basically shops can return to some form of normality, and not just grocery shops, but other shops. So we actually happen to have a fella heavily involved in a small and medium enterprise, locally owned and locally run here in Waterford on the line. Tommy, how are you getting on?
Yeah, good, thanks, lads. Thanks for having me on again. I'm in quite a good mood after yesterday. I think we were all a bit taken aback. We were all taken aback with it, you know?
Yeah,
he really kind of steamrolled forward, so... Yeah, onwards and upwards, I suppose.
I think as well, like for people who obviously haven't been paying attention too much to the Irish situation or maybe listening to this podcast from abroad, our essentially our Taoiseach, our version of Prime Minister, was very conservative in the media all week about easing restrictions, and then bam, all of a sudden yesterday he announces this like massive upscale. So Tommy, for you guys in Kyrie's auction rooms, like ultimately, you're basically back to normal while enforcing social distancing still in the shop from Monday. Is that right?
Yeah, we're back open from Monday, and yeah, with all the measures in place. But I think it's more of a vote of confidence as well. I think the way that he kind of basically said all kind of enterprise is kind of up and running again as of Monday, which is I think crucial, really, because I think there was about a stage like it was around like the last week in April where I wasn't the only one. What I thought, like, I don't know, like that the world is fucked and like they should never be anyway.
Yeah.
Name again or kind of what, but I think now there's a bit of light at the end of the tunnel. Because as well, I was listening to RT this morning and they had an interview with a guy in Kerry who owns a hotel, and he was just saying like from 6 o'clock last night, like that the phone started ringing again, bookings. So I think it's just basically all that kind of confidence. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, but still have money. It's just they actually see a bit of light at the end of the tunnel. That, now that it'll say feck it, I might go buy that, or I might buy that car, or go on that holiday, or
book yeah, it. I think there's the thing of just like bringing people along as well, like, you know, as in, like, everybody's been so good, and like the numbers reflected it, and like I know we're saying that is a big kind of fucking like a big turncoat to what was being said during the week in the media, but like at the same time it seems to be like the right step. And it's like even looking at other countries around the world, like it's still not like a massive step where like everything's been reopened. In fairness, everything seems to be like quite thought through. Like before we hopped on the podcast here, we were talking about how they're kind of asking businesses to open at 10:30, and that's to allow essential workers and obviously the so essential workers to get to their job for 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning, so that they can use available public transport first, and that they're not being on the public transport at the same time as shoppers are on. And then like you'll have obviously the workers of those shops trying to be in from maybe 10 a.m. or whatever, and then you have your shoppers coming in from 10:30 then. So like, I don't know, I'm pretty impressed with how things are tipping along, and the numbers seem to reflect it as well. Like phase one seems to not have affected, like our easing of restrictions in phase one doesn't seem to have affected the numbers. And I don't know, I think like even our hospitalizations have gone down to, they're nearly in double figures now. I think there's like 123 people or something as of yesterday, I think, in hospitals around the country. So yeah, it's great. Great news.
Yeah,
cheers. Cheers,
lads. Slantcha, lads. Okay, here we go. We're on the run. As you said, as you both have said here, like it's a much needed kind of shot in the arm. It's a vote of confidence in the Irish public. It's also just a sign of the fact that we've seen to turn this corner now. Like obviously the risk of a second wave looms, and like you know, I think I know certainly myself. I nearly have a newfound anxiety about going somewhere or doing something. So I think even that alone, that I'll be cautious in doing it, will lead to better practices. Like I think that will be reflected. I would hope that would be reflected in the general public. Again, giving people a benefit of the doubt. Like I think there will be like a societal impact, which will actually help with the lifting the restrictions. Where like if you are in, say, Kyrie's auction rooms, and you're wanting to go and look at something, instead of going up and budging alongside someone, you're just going to be a bit more fucking patient and give that person the time to do what they're doing. And then just give them a bit of personal space. Like, I wonder, is this going to be a good thing in terms of like social shopping and going and buying stuff like that in a like sort of an auction room, a grocery store, a clothes shop or whatever, where like people have started allowing themselves a bit of fucking personal space again. I think that might be no harm for that to be a bit of a change.
I think there's going to have to be a change in like this kind of, I think Irish people definitely had this kind of martyrdom about them in terms of working, whereby like no matter how sick you were or whatever, like there was a necessity for you to be in and for you to, you know, work, and like, you know, everyone was relying on you. And I think that'll have to change, because it's that like, it's you being sick and you spreading a virus, like, that is actually going to cause a second surge to reoccur. So, like, I think that even if, like, somebody does catch it, that's like, if you kind of, if you get it into people's mindset, that's like, this 14-day quarantine is a thing that's going to have to be in the public mindset for the next 5 years or something, like, or until a vaccine or whatever comes into play, that, like, that's going to have to be the way things are. Or, you know, like, if you're, like, you know, if you're sick, like, just stay out until you feel better. Like, no matter how minute or minuscule you think the sickness is, that's like, if you have a, you know, once it's one of the coronavirus symptoms that is causing this sickness, then, like, just stay out, even if it is an innocuous head cold. It's just the fact that you might be a spreader of it. Like, you know, I think that's going to have to change anyway.
That's an excellent point, though, because I think they're like, what you hit the, like, conventionally, the Irish mindset going to work was, if you had a sniffle and you didn't go in, you're letting your work colleagues down. Whereas now, without a doubt, if you have a sniffle and you go to work, you're letting your work colleagues down. You are you're endangering them. And I think if we can flip that mindset, I think it'll be a good thing. I think.
But even think about thing. Like, think about every year when, like, people get the flu, right? Like, just the common flu, and, like, people go into work, and, like, the amount of people that drop over the winter months with a flu that, like, are out for a few days of work, and, like, that's, you know, paid sick leave. That's, like, you know, it's like, you know, it might seem that, like, only you might be out for 2 days, one person might be out for 2 days, but if, like, the whole department often goes down with the flu, like, so you have those 2 days by maybe, like, seven people, that's your 14 days that gone, or like, there, whereas, like, if that one person was gone for 14 days, then, like, you know, you're okay, or not even 14 days, until, like, the virus has cleared itself, like, you know. So, yeah, I just think that, like, that's definitely going to have to be a mindset that's going to have to come into place of, like, you know, if you're sick, just, like, you are sick, you're, like, just, like, you're a potential spreader, like, you're an active spreader at that stage, so you, for societal advantage, like, just stay home, you know.
Yeah, and Tommy, before we get into what we're drinking there tonight, so I want to, like, just for my own curiosity, really more than anything, like, as someone who's running kind of like a retail antiques, an antiques house where you're selling stuff essentially, and it's a shop that people like I'd imagine before COVID, a lot of your business was like people something in the window catching people's eye and coming in and having a browse around and picking up three or four bits, like, the house. Do you think consumer habits are going to change? Like, do you think people are going to do less of that and more browsing online?
I think for us, like, our main channel now is our DMs on Instagram. Like, it's just someone just saying, do you have this, or I have this space, do you have anything to fit it? And now it's just people just literally sending us pictures of parts of their house that they're looking for an item, or sending us pictures saying, do you have anything like this? So it's very much, it's more of people being, I suppose our business is a bit different. So it's people being kind of proactive if they're looking for something a bit quirky or a bit different. But I think going forward, I think there's a big, there's a whole thing they were saying, like the whole model they're saying is for a business would be bricks and clicks. So you're using your website or your social to push people to shop in store. For now, they're saying that a new buzzword I've been reading is a thing called conversational commerce, whereas it's just people actually talking with a business in it or doing it. Pre-sale or post-sale, you know, if they're buying something or testing something. So I think habits will be people are just more kind of proactive, kind of messaging businesses, you know, that they're not really kind of going to visit a store off the cuff, really. They're going to really plan it, you know, and make a day of it.
Yeah, like, I was listening to a podcast actually there during the week, and they were saying that like that, say, like those high street shops like H&M and Zara and all those. No, actually, not Zara. Sorry, they said Zara was actually quite good, but H&M, Topman, Topshop, or whatever. What they tend to do is that they like buy in, a, like a huge, summer like selection of clothes or whatever, that buy in like a massive amount of like just the one type of style or like whatever they think is going to be good for that summer. Whereas Zara, what they would do is that they buy small batches of different types of styles and they test it out in the store and then they get feedback then. So it's kind of more data driven that like the depending on the sales of that smaller batch of clothes, then they come back and they buy like bigger batches of like that item then because they know that's going to be a better seller. And it says reduce, like at least like reduces in waste and stuff like that, but it's more like consumer driven, like, you know, that like, you know, like you're kind of testing the market the whole time with it. I think that could like is one thing that kind of facilitate, like, you know, like people where, like, you know, people have more say in what they want to buy, and it kind of stops that kind of like that browsing more so, you know, like people going into Pennies or whatever and you know, and having to browse around. Whereas, like, you know, if you're kind of, you know, even like things like, you know, carrying out, I saw there's a crowd that are doing this box, so it was actually again the same podcast, but a crowd are doing a box for Bangladeshi workers. So because H&M and the likes have not bought these huge batches of clothes, then there's a load of those box or those clothes that are still in Bangladesh that are just going to go to the skip. So this crowd are doing these like boxes, like these fashion boxes, whereby you type in or complete a survey saying like, oh, I like plain colors. I like, you know, I'm medium size. I'm a man. I like to dress between the ages of whatever. This is my type of style that I like. And then you get sent a random box of clothes from that they've kind of custom tailored for you. But like, it's, you know, it's still the same price. Actually, well, this one is cheaper because it's trying to help those workers in Bangladesh. But, you know, it's more kind of targeted to you. So I think that could be a kind of a, you know, there's loads of different ways. Like, there's only one way, but like, I think there's loads of ways to try and facilitate, I don't know, a better kind of consumer experience. Like, you know, even like if we're talking beer, I know we're going to go onto the what are you drinking tonight section now, but, you know, say the likes of kind of craft central and stuff, like, you know, you have like these kind of like mystery boxes, but like, you know, it tells you what, and it's not even a mystery box, but it's like a selection of beers, and, you know, they might have a few different types, you know, and it lets it be a bit more, you know, targeted to what you want, like, you know. And I think there's definitely a facility for websites to go like, oh, DJ has, you know, bought off Craft Central and he has bought, you know, this beer before, like, we recommend DJ you drink this because this is, you know, along similar notes of what you've drank before, or this is what you've liked, this is what you've given 5 stars to. I think there's just a huge market for being able to use data from the websites to try and, you know, limit the amount of like interaction in shops that's actually required, you know.
Well, I think as well there, what you make some great points there. And I think at the end of the day, like, the data is out there for everyone to see if you actually really tried.
It's just not being collected properly, like, you know.
Yeah, it's a brilliant name of an app, but like Untapped is basically untapped potential when it comes to beer drinking. Like,
exactly.
Where people are actually uploading to a website what they're drinking. And like, I know because of GDPR, like, it wouldn't possibly be done, but like, there's a pool of data there where, you know, right, you can't, Untapped can't give away all the information to whoever. But if you were a small microbrewery and you were looking at what people are enjoying at the moment, if you just went on to Untapped and looked at the most like highly rated beers in the last month, and you saw like certain, you know, types of beers amongst craft beer drinkers, and it makes sense to pursue that kind of beer, or think like, right, fuck it, this year, this time of the year, this is what's popular, and try and plan around that. So I think, yeah, like looking at consumer habits more than trying to impose what you think consumers should do on them is maybe a way forward. You're definitely right. And speaking of consumer habits, Owen, what are you drinking tonight?
So actually, I have a funny story about what I am drinking tonight. So I went to an O'Brien's off-license in Naas here. And it's in kind of the shopping center where the Tesco is. So Tesco is kind of within like the, it's like half the shopping center, and then they have like individual shops kind of alongside it. But this O'Brien's, so I've been to another other O'Brien's like getting beers, but this O'Brien's, what they've done is where the entrance of the shop was, they've now made that the till, right? Ooh. So there's no entry into the shop. So like the front of the shop is literally just like call out what you want and they'll get it from the shop and will, you know, bring it for you, right? But it has totally ruined the like craft beer experience, whereby like you go perusing around and going, oh, what's this can? Yeah. And as we were saying there, off mic there, that, you know, the craft breweries put so much effort into their branding and like how appealing they make their cans look. And so it's actually very hard to try and like pick something off a shelf or like, you know, actually to select a beer. So I was there like at the counter and he was just like, oh, what do you want? And I was just like, oh God, what do I want? So I could see that they had a 3 for €9 deal, like for their two top shelves. And anyway, I spotted that they had Wicklow Wolf on it. So I was just like, sure, look, that's one I've drank before. I'll go for that now instead of like trying to, you know, mess around. So I said, oh, do you have Arcadia by Wicklow Wolf? Because I kind of wanted it. I haven't drank a lager in a while. So I said, I'll go for an old classic lager. So went for that. And then he was just like, and what are the other two you want? And I said, right, what's left and right of that? So he goes, oh, there's a Mammoth IPA and what's the other one? Elevation Pale Ale by Wicklow Wolf as well. So, right, I was like, those three, that'll do me, and head out. But yeah, it was just a very weird experience. Like, and I think that was like a negative like shopping experience. I know a lot of shops have adapted and have like put positives in place, but I found that a bit off-putting to try and deal with that. Like, it's, you know, there's some behind me as well, like, and I was there acting a maggot trying to ask him for beer, like, you know, especially with off licenses as well. Like, you know, off licenses are a place where you're like, you know, especially like say for wines, like how do you go and you, like, you know, oh, do you have a Chilean Sauvignon Blanc, or, you know, I'm trying to, you know, you can't really ask your man up at the table for like wine advice or anything like that, you know. So like, you know, what do you do? Like, oh, can I have a Chilean Sauvignon Blanc under a tenner or like something, like, you know? Yeah. So anyway, sorry, to call a long story short, I am drinking the Mammoth IPA by Wicklow Wolf there at the moment. So it's 6.2%. And yeah, it's really good. Really, really flavorsome. Good body, as they say.
Yeah, but I think you touched on something there that definitely resonates with me when, like, say, if I go to an off license and I want, or even if I go to a pub and pubs are open and I'm like, I feel like trying something new, you want a good look, you want to go browse, you want to read the can, you want to, you know, talk to the barman or talk to an informed person in the off license about the type of beers you're trying to buy. So, like, trying to stand up in front of a shop with a queue forming behind you, like, it's a bit of unnecessary pressure.
Yeah, it was. And like, it was even the fact that you're queuing outside of the shop. Like, I was queuing in the shopping center hallway, like, you know, so I don't know, a bit of more added pressure. And just shout out as well to what I had before this, which was the Arcadia Lager. Really, really good, just classic lager, but also gluten-free as well. So I know a few lads that I've like met along the years who've been like celiac and stuff, and who've just like stuck on ciders and stuff, who've never gone for like beer in general, like, you know.
Irish?
What?
Yeah. Is it Irish?
It's Wicklow Wolf, yeah.
Wicklow, okay.
Yeah. So
I literally had this conversation with Neil's brother-in-law last night, like, I was chatting to him about, because he was on to me about beer, because basically, obviously, with pubs being closed, he hasn't had anything. He is a celiac, proper, genuine celiac, so he can't have gluten. And he drinks cans of this Swiss stuff called Hoofy in the local pub, where he literally buys the cans and gives them to the pub, and then they give them back to him, like, you know, which is a brilliant story itself. But I know, like, Stag...
And does he pay the pub then, or what?
So basically, he runs a pub himself. That's not the local pub. So, like, he gets them through C&C to be delivered to him. But, so he does buy them off the pub. Like, the pub does pay for them, like, and then he buys them off the pub. But he, like, so I think it was last week's podcast, I think it was, where I talked about Liam's other brother-in-law who runs Powers of the Lord in Galway. And we were up there one evening a couple of years ago, and they had Stag's Ale from the Nine White Deer, which is a gluten-free beer. And Noel, Liam's brother-in-law, Celia, drank it, thought it was amazing. So just contacted me, like, we were chatting about this, contacted me last night about, basically, his wife tried to do a good thing and bought him three gluten-free beers in Aldi or Lidl, and he just didn't like them. They were rotten, he said. I don't know which ones they were. He didn't have the name to hand. But, like, that were, like, Arcadia being gluten-free and Stag's Ale having a fully gluten-free range. Like, you know, the poor fuckers like that who literally don't have the range of choices that we have. It's great that it's there for them, like, so it's really good that there's a good, really good quality gluten-free lager out there for celiacs.
Yeah, it is. It's a proper classic lager as well. Like, it's really,
yeah,
really, really good. Like, I just want to go on. I haven't had, like, you know, the IPAs can be a bit, like, not that they can be a bit flavorsome, but, like, I'm just saying that, like, sometimes you just want a beer, just classic, like, you know, and that's what exactly what that is.
Speaking of classics, Tommy, what are you drinking tonight?
don't judge me. I'm out with my parents there, so, all we have in the house is Corona.
Don't knock it, man.
No, it's actually great. I'm enjoying it. So you can't beat it. I had a bit of a heavy one last night, and I drank an absolute fucking ton of craft beers. I had Brewdog. I was on the Elvis juice. I was on the Punk IPA as well. So I was
The Elvis juice is punchy, like, you know. Elvis juice will get you there. Like, Punk IPA is a nice, like, easy going IPA, but Elvis juice has a bit of punch to it, like, it'll fucking get you there.
Tommy, you had a story actually about Brewdog and how they're going kind of delivery hubs, isn't it, from their pubs.
Yeah, so actually, there's a podcast you should listen to. I would recommend. It's called The Leaders. It's where they kind of interview just kind of business leaders in the UK. And I was listening to it about with the founder of Brewdog. So he was saying that obviously that their 90% of their business is gone overnight. Like, their pubs had to close. So now all their pubs in all the big cities in the UK are literally hubs. So they're selling their own food through the hub and craft beer and craft pints. So they're using each pub as a kind of mini depot for Brewdog.
I assume they have, like, collection times and all this shit, like, just to, like, same thing, just to try and...
Yeah, they do. And I think that, well, they've a heap of mopeds just basically flying around London now with pints in the back.
Oh, Jesus, God.
Billy, my friend Billy, shout out to Billy Ryan, he's a listener. he bought 8 points. He said he got 8 points for £28. It's not bad at all.
Wow!
Yeah,
really good.
So
£3.50 a pint. More. Yeah, £3.75 a pint.
And should the food in Brewdog's great as well? Like, it's just good. I suppose, what would you call it? Good, not pub grub, but good.
It's kind of American-y, isn't it?
American. You know, wings and burgers and
that kind
of. But.
Good feeling.
Yeah, so they've changed their kind of model that way. And it's flying, I think. In terms of basically all the channels, or that channel that they've opened, like, is fucking flying for them. But obviously they're losing money elsewhere. But actually, did you actually see with Brewdog as well, they launched a hazy IPA last week called Barnard Castle after...
Dominic Cummins, is it?
Yeah, of course. It was like a piss take, like a kind of some sort of April Fools, but no, they have it. I was only going to buy it just for the crap.
Yeah, hazy IPA, that's quality.
fair play to them. Very good. And actually, like, speaking of BrewDog, like, they were one of the first real, like, mass-scale craft brewers that were properly independent. They've gone to huge scale now, but I suppose rather than what am I drinking tonight, I'll give you a quick run through what have I drank today. Because we had the virtual beer festival today again. Shout out to Brian Cal, who organized a superb festival. But I'll give you three highlights from the festival. I won't run through it all because the entire podcast will just be what was I drinking today. But there's a couple of highlights. So the use of lactose in beer is like a big contentious issue among craft beer drinkers. Like, and there's this like phrase in the Irish craft beer industry, lactose me whole. There's a great adversity to people drinking lactose infused and pale ales. But Rascals had one feature that genuinely was amazing. It was fruits and maitles, an amazing fruity pale ale. It's like a milkshake pale ale, I think they call it. And they just like absolutely loaded the yolk up with, I think it was passion fruit and mango. And just the lactose actually offset it quite well. So that was really, really nice. But Blackskin Sale had this fucking double dry hopped cryo New England Indian pale ale, which is a mad description of a beer. But I find this a Blackskin Sale. Like, they have the obviously we've like featured KPA and our Blacks IPA like on the podcast a good bit, but they go and do some mad, really cool brewing shit. And this like Ace of Haze that they have is 4.2% double dry hop, one of the best beers I've had in a long time. And I was actually saying to Owen, actually Tommy, before you joined the call, that like it's like the last virtual, like when you get a bunch of people who drink craft beer together and talk about beer, it's very rarely that there's a beer that absolutely nobody has a fucking criticism or some smarmy comment or anything to say about it. This was universally loved. It was super, like really fucking superb. So if you come across that from Blacksbury, Ace of Haze, I'd highly recommend it. And then the other one then, which is the name is a big favorite of me and Owen's, is Clancy's Cans. It's a raspberry vice from Ballyclickhaven in Leash there. And it's basically like, a raspberry vice sounds like it's going to be really sweet because of the raspberry, but it's actually lovely balance with it being a kind of wheat style beer. It's really fucking good. And there's a lovely little story behind it as well. Basically, they call it Clancy Cans because the farm has been in the family since like the late 17th century. And for five generations then, back to like the famine time, these Clancy's have worked on the farm with the Walsh family who owned the Ballyclickhaven farm. And basically, the guy who's working there now, like just the guy who runs the farm has been like, you know, we need to fucking tribute these guys. They've done five generations working on our farm for us. So they're actually doing a series of individual brews as a tribute to this family that's given like fucking 170, 180 years service.
The Clancy brothers.
Yeah, the Clancy's, yeah. Which is fucking a really good story, like, and really sound. So that was fucking brilliant. So basically what I'm drinking tonight, I just finished off the Clancy's can, and I've opened a can there of the Wicklow Brewers Hot Nut, which is another Irish pale ale, lovely caramelly, kind of darker borderline brown pale ale, which is like really fucking tasty. So a lot of good shit going on there. And that actually, Hop Note I've had in draft before. And actually, another thing that was featured was Graciosa. And Graciosa is something, Owen, that we both have had on tap in Phil Grimes in our time. And I just wanted to use this as a fucking wonderful way to segue into looking at, right, when are we going to drink in Phil Grimes again? So Tommy, I suppose you haven't, we started Pint Watch after the last time you've been on the podcast. There's been some huge fucking developments, obviously, just in the last couple of days when it comes to Pint Watch, where like last week we were talking about maybe the end of July, 20th of July, if they bring in 1 meter, so 1 meter social distancing. Now all of a sudden pubs, it's looking like the 29th of June for pubs that serve food. So just there to point watch, are you, do you think like 29th of June is just going to be pubs with food, or do you think if they reduce it to 1 litre, we might actually have all pubs on the 29th of June? From a point watch point of view, where do you think we are now?
I think, as I was just saying, I just have a feeling if the next days goes fairly okay, that maybe on the Friday before the 29th of June that they may... Well, I think we're still looking at the 20th of July, but they may just ease the distancing 1 meter. So I suppose in a nutshell, I don't think there's a lot of pubs, just like we said, like Phil Grimes, that obviously does not have a kitchen. So I think anyway, it'll be the 20th of July. I think that's, which I'm very much looking forward to. Even though I was just actually looking at the calendar, it's a Monday, so you have to book the Monday and Tuesday off. And, a rip roar.
Are you Tommy? Do you, talking about point watch? Like, are you keen to go for a pint like on the first night?
When I'm not at all. Not at all. I was only saying to my cousin earlier, as in I wouldn't go near a pub for the first week or two of it. I don't think, because it's just madness, and I'd imagine there's going to be a lot of mistakes made from the publican's behalf, on people's behalf. Do you know, things are going to go wrong.
It's going to be a difficult fucking period of adjustment, really. Definitely. Yeah. I think, like, I agree with you. I'm not going near a pub for the first couple of weeks. Actually, Owen, I know you went off there just to get a can, and I'm sure if you heard me talking about doing the segue to Pint Watch, but I was saying, I was just saying to Tommy, like, you know, do you think that there's any chance that there'll be a further escalation, like, when it comes to Pint Watch? Do you think that they'll drop it to 1 meter and all of a sudden they'll say that, like, you know, right, pubs can open from the 29th of June with 1 meter social distancing?
I think they will have to, and I think it's maybe not just on pubs, but on for restaurants. I was actually listening to Eamon Dunphy's podcast today, and he had Jim Power, the economist, on, who's actually from Waterford. He's a very good economist, but he was just saying, like, as in small to medium sized enterprise are the backbone of Ireland, like so many pubs and restaurants, and the harsh reality is that a lot of them really can't function on 2 meters distancing. Do you know, it's just not viable. So I think the pressure will come from that, I think.
Yeah. Well, this ties into something that you guys actually, I went to the Jack's before we started recording. When I came back, you guys were talking about Jeff's, and apparently, like, Jeff's Bar in Waterford, which would do a lot of food and an awful lot of their business during the week, I suppose, would be people coming for a meal after work and having a couple of pints. And didn't they say that even though they fall into the category that qualifies to open and have a couple of, and open and run as a bar that offers food on the 29th of June, you guys are saying that they're going to hold back until the 20th of July anyway. And that made me think, like, I'd say a lot of the reasoning behind a lot of places like this to not open on the 29th of June is because with 2 meters social distancing enforced, I don't know if it's financially viable for them to pay all the staff, get all the food in, and do all of that as a business enterprise from the 29th of June. If you have 2 meters social distancing, because you only have 30% of their capacity then, I'd say.
Yeah, I think if you bring it back to a few of the points that we made last week as well, I'd say, like, it's like a lot of those pubs only have a food option in order to get people in the door. They're not actually making money off the food, they're making money off the pints. Like, so, say, take Jeff's for example, like, that if you have 1 meter distancing as opposed to 2 meter distancing, so say what you were saying, at 2 meter distancing, you're talking 30% of your capacity max, 30% capacity of your max. But like with 1 meter social distancing, then you're doubling that. You know, it's literally like you can fit double the amount of people into that space. So then,
I don't even think, Owen, it's going to be a linear correlation. Sorry to put in there, but I think as well, if you reduce it to one, there'll be areas and pubs where 2 meters doesn't work.
Yeah.
But then 1 meter works for all of it. Like, so I think you're more than doubling the capacity of an awful lot of places if you reduce the 1 meter social distancing.
Yeah, no, 100%. Even if you think of some of the places in Jess now, like there's, and that we were talking about J&K Walsh's and the Long Hall in Dublin, there's loads of places whereby like that 2 meter squared doesn't even fit from the bar to the wall. Like you're talking a long corridor. There's loads of long corridors in pubs in Ireland whereby a small original pub is attached onto a bigger like back pub or whatever that was like another building, and that they've built a corridor in between. Like, you know, it seems seamless when you're in the pub, but like they're actually two separate old buildings that they've actually just bought out, like, and had to like put corridors and stuff between. So it doesn't work, like, you know. So I think, yeah, they'll have to, but bring it back to your point, or bring it back to your question of asking me whether they'll reduce it down to 1 meter and ask pubs to open on the 29th of June. All pubs to open on 29th of June? No. I think there's, as I said before, I think they're going to use the restaurant type pubs to be somewhat of a pilot to see, because as you said there, shit is going to go wrong. Like things are going to go wrong. There's going to be mistakes. There's going to be, and it's better to have mistakes on a somewhat smaller level than to have it where everybody has run reckless, like, you know. And so I think they're going to have to run it on those. And then by the 20th of July, and I think they are, I'm going to say my point watch is going to stick at the 20th of July now, as per the guidance. I don't think they're going to change it. And I think there's going to be a lot of mistakes that they're going to have to correct by the 20th of July in those 3 weeks. It's going to be, like, unfortunately, there's going to be headlines about this, like, you know.
So people are going to be sitting at every kind of busy street corner, you know, waiting just to...
I think you're raising some really good points there. And obviously last week we clarified, like, because of the development complications, like when we come to pint watch, we're talking about when can people first just go to a pub for a pint without having to fucking eat a chicken curry Caesar salad or something, you know. So I think we are talking about that second phase definitely of pubs reopening. I do think that there will be, and I think I touched on this last week, there'll be a strong lobby group for pubs who will not meet the criteria to open on the 29th of June to say that they're being discriminated against from a business point of view. And I think that, like, what we've seen this week is the government saying to, like, when a business is ready to open, it's ready to open. So I'm actually going to be a bit, I'm going to be a bit brave on Pint Watch this week. And I'm going to say that I think yes, there will be mistakes made on the 29th of June and over that couple of days. I think business owners, I think, will be very, very slow to allow these mistakes to happen and not act on them. So yeah. I think that you'll see mistakes happen the first couple of days and it clamped down on very quickly. And I think if we don't see a rise in cases and we see a dropping of the recommendations, so the WHO recommendations is, and at, like, you know, 1 meter social distancing to 1.5 meter social distancing and more if you think it's warranted. So they can drop it to 1 meter social distancing. The toilets are still an issue. It's something that I've harped on about. And actually, Wayne from the Irish Beer blog slagged me off about it in the virtual beer festival today about Jack's, like, and said that I keep bringing up the podcast. But it's a very important point. What I would say is, my prediction is, and I got the prediction right last week, so I'm falsely overconfident with my prediction this week. But I think there'll be a very strong lobby from that element of the BFI and the LVA who cannot meet the criteria to provide food via their own means. They don't need a restaurant license, but they just need to demonstrate that they provide their own produced food on the premises. The people who don't fall into that category, your Phil Grimes, your J.K. Welch's, your Henry Downs in Waterford, the likes of, there's only a handful of pubs in Kilkenny that don't. What I would say is, I think they'll be putting big pressure on the government if the figures are still good at then to open up earlier. And I think that you could see that being brought forward a week. I'm gonna fucking move my pint watch date forward to the 13th of July, purely based on the fact that I think there'll be mistakes made. I think it'll be clamped down early. I mean, if the figures hold and the social distancing advice comes down, I think you could see the last phase, which, you know, originally last phase was August 10th. Now it's July 20th. I think that last phase could be brought forward a week if there is evidence there to suggest it can be done. And I think that there will be enough lobbyist groups, not just in pubs, putting pressure on the government to do that. And I could see that happening if the figures are right. I don't know if that'll be right or wrong, or whether it's the right thing to do then. I think we've seen this evolving so fast. Like yesterday, nobody thought we were going to get the news that we got about other businesses. So I just find it very, very interesting. And I'm saying now, I could see a case where the data continues to be very, very good. And I go on, you drove home the point last week. This is all data-driven information. If the data continues to be really good, I think we could be looking at the 13th of July as the date that Ireland exits lockdown, as per the original phase 5 and now the final phase, which would be phase 4. Any final thoughts on that, lads, before we move on to the next segment? Or?
Yeah, well, just on that, I think you could be right about them. Yeah, if they bring it to 1 meter, that I think that the lobby from pubs and kind of restaurants will push that. But I don't know, I think it's going to be very interesting once the pubs do open. And I know you could talk about this for hours, but I wonder, will they just set a limit that you, if you go into a pub, your max is going to be like 4 pints or just, you know, or something like that.
I think they'll set a limit on the number of people who can be in there per square foot. But I don't think they'll set a time limit on how long you can stay in there.
Yeah.
Will regulars get? Will they get a card or anything? Or
if Tom Ryan could let us know. But I think as well though, like what I think you might see is you might see restricted opening hours as it comes closer to the time. Like you guys have now, I think is a half thing. You can't. Like I think like you'll have early closes. I think we touched on that a couple of weeks ago. But I do think you'll see early closes.
I have a question for you, right? Do you see your habits changing as to how you'll approach a pub, like in terms of like how long you'll spend there, like what time of day you'll go there at, or you know?
Yeah, I think maybe with age anyway. But I was really starting to enjoy just going to the pub earlier in the evening and finishing by 10 o'clock, do you know, whip into it at 4 o'clock or something. And
yeah.
Or whatever. But I think that's going to grow, I think. But I think the whole thing about the toilet, like, I don't know, if you're horsing pints into yourself, like, there's going to be a toilet. I think that's one thing I'm going to have to bear in mind.
I was listening to a podcast during the week and there was a brilliant sentence made, a point made where it was like, we're going to have to shift now from trying to figure out how to get to a point where we don't have the virus to try and figure out how do we live in tandem with the virus. And I think stuff like pub toilets are the small practical things that we need to figure out. Do we change our habits that we just become more fucking accommodating of people in toilets? Like, actually, I was thinking about this, dude. The main problem is, like, with the virus, people are going to be hyper-conscious of washing their hands and hand-washing habits in Irish toilets, certainly amongst males, isn't great. We're great for social distancing before COVID-19 and the jacks, like the looks you'd give someone if they stood in the urinal next year. Like, you know, the splash zone is a well-established practice in toilets anyway. I just think it's the hand-washing is the problem.
I think as well, though, it's the cute, like, so... Whatever about, this is getting completely ridiculous, but like whatever about when you're standing next to somebody in the jacks, right? There seems to be a gap there. But when you're, you know, say like festival or like big night out at Christmas time or whatever, when there's like a heat, there's about 40 lads in the jacks, right? And like you have lads like breathing down your neck as you're going for a piss, like right up, like the queue is like, you know, like right, like, fuck, you know, like arse to arse kind of job, like, you know, it's crazy. So I don't know how that's going to work. I even on a regular night, I often find that people just kind of stand right behind you when your pump is like, and that's, and a lot of the time that's due to a wall behind them, you know, so that they're trying to like, you know, get in and keep the space and move into the jacks, like, you know. So I don't know, I actually just don't know how, like, is it going to be a thing of like limit to the amount of like, you know, safely distance urinals in the bathroom, that's the amount of people that are out in the bathroom. But then how do you have a queue, a socially distant queue coming out the door then? There's a lot of things to think about, really. Like,
yeah, but to bring it back to your question one then as well about the habits and new habits of approaching a pub, like, I think I had made that shift already to like wanting a snug, wanting a quiet corner of a pub, you know, go 4 or 5 pints, enjoy them, go home.
I've an idea for a pub, right? We call it Snugs, right? And it's just like all Snugs around. Like, you just have barricades all around, like everywhere.
16 Snugs around the bar with 16 doors onto the street.
Perfect, perfect. Like,
yeah. Okay. Actually, we just call it the social isolating.
And a urinal in the corner of the Snug as well. You'd be sorted.
Yeah.
Each Snug is a little bucket.
Yeah. Just empty Luke's air boxes under each chair.
But yeah, I'd agree with Tommy as well. Like, I'd say early pints, or, you know, early doors, it's the way things are. Like, yeah. I actually, like, coming out of work and going into a bar straight away then afterwards is,
yeah,
it's hard to beat. It's hard to beat that. Like,
speaking of drinking habits, and it's something that we've been touching on the podcast constantly, but Owen, you had a fresh take on this during the week as we were chatting. And I thought, we said it'd be well worth discussing on the podcast. You were talking to me about the economics or the economics of home drinking now, where you're drinking cans, and you were talking about the value of the perceived value of drinking from home. And you had some brilliant points on actually the value of having a drink in a bar when it's priced right. So do you want to maybe throw those points you made to me out there, and then we can have more general discussion around what you were thinking?
Yeah, so it ties on from that trip actually to that carry out to get, sorry, that O'Brien's actually, to get those Wicklow Wolf cans. And as I said earlier on there in the podcast, that I got 3 cans for €9, which was €3 a can, right? So when you're thinking about it, you go, God, that's very good value, €3 a can, right? But literally, as I was leaving the place, I was doing the math in my head, right? So I was saying, right, so these cans here are 440 ml, right? So you're talking 4/5 of the can, or 4/5 of the pint there, as to what you'd normally be drinking, right? So, all right, so that's the first thing, right? So, you know, it's less, right? And secondly, like, what would you be paying for? You'd be paying, what, maybe £5.50 for that a pint of that in a pub, for a pint of, say, Arcadia or that Mammoth IPA there. So that's an extra £2.50 on top of the drink you're getting. So, like, £2.50 for the extra 28 mil or whatever it's going to be, plus like getting it served, like having the can or the pint taken away from you, serving up, having the chat with the barman, having like the environment and chat. I actually think that like it nearly pays you to go to a bar. Like, it's actually very good value when you think about it in comparison to like actually buying cans. Like, if you take the example of restaurants, I'm going to a restaurant and getting a meal in a restaurant as opposed to making a meal at home. Like, you know, say, like, even let's say, like, if you got a spaghetti bolognese in a restaurant, you're probably talking 10, 12 quid. Like, you could make a spaghetti bolognese for a family for under €3, like, or, you know what I mean? So, like, I actually think that the value there is not as much, but I actually think that buying pints in a pub is actually pretty good value for what you're getting, like, you know.
I totally agree.
Good.
Yeah, no, but I think there as well, like when I put all the overheads that Pulse have, and you're getting a point in a glass that's handed to you. You're not washing that glass. You're not disposing of the can that is coming or the bottle, you know. And I know that there are trivial fucking things in the thing. But as well, I just think that fucking thing, like even that, like, trust me, as someone who has spent the vast majority of the last 10 weeks confined to my own home, getting that fucking break away from your house, that mental break, like, I don't think you can put a value on that right now. Like, I think it's invaluable.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If you had said to me, like, you're going to pay $5.50 a pint, you know, you're going to pay $5.50 a pint for something. If you wanted to get 3 pints that'd cost you $16.50, you could get 3 for $9 in cans or 3 for $10 in cans. Like, give me the 3 pints with, say, I'd much rather three of us sitting around the table at a safe distance now, having a fucking pint in a pub with a bit of atmosphere. Yeah. Like, this is great and Zoom is brilliant and I'm really fucking enjoying this chat. It's lovely. But fuck me, like, I miss a pub. And I think when you think about that there, like, you're if you're paying €10 for 3 cans on a deal and it's $16.50 for those pints, you're paying an extra $6.50 for that 2.5 to 3 hours to sit in a pub and have a genuine social interaction. That's $2.20 an hour for some proper service and some fucking social interaction. We are ripping fucking publicans off for what the good ones are offering us, man. And I never thought about it in that way until you made that point to me the other day, and I thought it was a fucking brilliant point. I thought you absolutely encapsulated it superbly. And it's something that, you know, like we said over the last 2 weeks, like, right, you know my stance on the likes of Wetherspoons and that. For a Phil Grimes, a J.K. Welch's, a fucking Tom Marrows that's owned now by Sarah Jane Hansen, and a pair of Tea Rooms, and Brendan before her, and Tom before him, the likes of Henry Downs, like these really good fucking pubs, like, and you could list off a million of them. Like, fuck me, I want to support them guys. Now, like I said to Tommy earlier, I'm not going in the first week or two after lockdown opens for my own personal reasons, but fuck me, we supported them beforehand. I want to support them long after this. And you're dead right. The fucking value for money we get off pubs, like, it's unquantifiable.
I know. Even, like, in terms of, like that amount of just, like in fairness to a lot of publicans are, like, I suppose the craft beer pubs that we would go to, like, their knowledge of the beers as well is just extraordinary. Like, yeah. You know, like, we drank our fair share of beers and stuff, but, like, I wouldn't have a notion in comparison to those guys. Like, they're out of this world. Like, the stuff that they know, the context they have, like, the even the little backstories they had about, like, the brewers, the, like, you know, even some of the sales reps and stuff like that. Like, it's just absolute gems that they're coming out with. Like, and it's just like, I don't know. I think as you said, there's like mental health kind of stuff as well. Like, I know there's a bit of a negativity associated with, like, drinking your problems away, but, like, there's also an ear there as well, like, whereby there's someone listening to you as you're chatting away to them in a pub, like, you know, and okay, yes, alcohol is being served, but, like, that's, you know, you're not sitting there, like, it's not lads who are sitting in a corner on their own, like, drinking away. It's guys who are up the bar talking away to their group of, like, friends at the bar as well, like, you know. So I'm looking forward to it coming back.
Yeah, big time. And as well, I think, you know, like you're saying, it's what, say, for instance, basically €2 an hour for you to sit in a good pub and a nice beer. But think about what, I suppose, with the way the world is now, that is our only social outlet, really.
Yeah.
You can't sit anywhere else, really.
Yeah. I know, especially in Ireland as well, whereby, like, we don't have any, like, late night coffee shops or tea shops or anything like that. Like, you know, it's like that's our late night activity, unless you want to go to a cinema or something like that. Like, but there's only so many films you can go see. Like, you know,
there was a late night cafe, and it even did food up until like midnight when we were in UCC. One, I'm not sure if you can remember the name of it, it's by where Speedos is now. It's down that lane between, say, the famous Hillbillies and Bishop Lucy Park, where you're going down towards, oh, what was the name of the fucking nightclub that was on the right? There's a place down there, like, that was this kind of late night cafe place. It's the only place I ever remember seeing in Ireland that was this late night cafe style place. And it went out of business when we were in college, like between second and third year for us, like. And again, it was a great outlet, and you're dead right in terms of we don't have those there. So, as you said, Tommy, like €2 an hour for what a pub gives you, like, and that's comparing it to what you'd get at home. It's a fucking great deal. It's a great deal, isn't it?
Like, it's a bargain. Really, it's a bargain. Yeah.
It really and truly is. Like, and maybe if the general public start thinking, framing it in that way. And as you said, like, if this changes consumer habits, that people are going for 3, 4, 5 pints the odd night to get the social escape in a pub, then it'll reduce the harmful relationship that we have with alcohol on top of that that you were referring to. So I think it's an all round fucking positive anyway. Like, it's great. It's great development. Actually, Owen, something you were going to talk about was a couple of memorable sessions just to get a bit of nostalgia going. We've gone way over time on Pint Watch and this chat. So if we have a little bit of chat about the memorable sessions you were talking about, Owen, I think we have a good podcast there then.
I think with like the old COVID-19, I think the nostalgia factor has kind of kicked up with a lot of people, like, you know, be watching Disney and things like that. So I was kind of thinking about, you know, like something that could tie into the podcast, and I think, I don't know, some memorable sessions that we might have all had during the years. So I suppose to kick it off there, like, some of my most favorite ones have definitely been during college. I had some amazing sessions. So we lived on Magazine Road there in Cork, and like, that house was very sessionable, all right. We had a lot of people in the whole time. We had a good mix of guys. I think it was a 7-bed house, and everyone was doing a different course in the house. So like, you'd have a good mix of people like every night of the week coming in and out, like, you know. And then you'd have mega sessions as well of guys from all the courses and all that's kind of coming in and amalgamating into one. But I think one of the ones that really shines out to me were our Halloween sessions there. And it's just because of just the triviality of it and just how fun everyone was. Just like, you know, it's kind of a bit more carefree than normal because everyone was just like dressing up here, just, you know, waiting on the next person to come in, just see what they were dressed up as. And it was just great. Like, so there was one year where we all dressed up as Kiss and the band, and that was really, really good. Like, there was this, you know, there was people like just dressed up as just like ridiculous things. Like, someone dressed up as like Ellen DeGeneres, and it was just a really good bunch. And like, I think all the girls there that night had dressed up as Disney princesses. I think they spent an absolute fortune on the fucking costumes as well, to be all of the Disney princesses. But yeah, those, I don't know. I just really loved those nights of like, just everyone just like being completely carefree, like just not giving a shit about what everyone thought of. Like, I think that was the thing as well. I suppose in college as well, when we were there, like, not for guys now as much, but for girls, there seems to be an awful lot of pressure on how you looked on a night out, like, you know. And, you know, people use, like, girls especially have to get, like, very dressed up and stuff on nights out. And, like, it, you know, I think it was just an added pressure on them. Like, you know, I remember as well, like, it used to be this classic thing of, like, oh, you know, oh, what time are we all meeting up tonight? And, you know, you'd be there, oh, sure, session starts at 8. And sure, all the lads would be like, all right, sure, we'll go to a pub beforehand at 7 because we have nothing to do. Whereas it's actually only kicking off at 8 because the girls need to get ready. So I think there was just an added pressure then, where it's just like, I thought that night was just like, everyone was just like, just, I don't know, just just didn't give a shit. Everyone was just like so chatty and everything. And then another session that was a really, really good one as well that we had was we got a dishwasher in our house. So we hadn't had a dishwasher for half the year. And then we got a dishwasher then just one random evening, our landlord came over and it was just the guys in the house that we had the session with. So it was just the seven of us. But we had this session anyway, just to commemorate the dishwasher. And it was fucking, it was loosey goosey. Like an obstacle course in the house. Like along, we had this big long corridor, and we had like an obstacle course going from one end to the other, of like trying to like go over like broomsticks and like in between like clothes horses and all this kind of stuff. Like try to make from one end of the corridor to the end. So yeah, that was just really, really good. Like I thought that was just amazing. What about you guys? What do you have? Do you have any memorable ones?
Yeah, I had a good few in Limerick now. I used to, good thing about UL was that, I suppose everyone lived in Castle Troy, which is obviously a bit outside the city. So you were never, like, just like four or five housing estates that were just the hub of activity. But I remember it was actually in fourth year. It was Project X, yeah. Yeah, it was just after Project X came out. There was this, it was just near my house, but there was this kind of apartment complex, this kind of gated kind of apartment complex. So it was like a big square. It was like a big square of apartments, and it had like a gate and a car park in the middle. Well, it was towards the end of fourth year, and I think, or was it third? No, it was fourth year, and something happened, but that the bank took over or NAMA. That the apartments went into NAMA and like they were booting like a load of people out. So they decided to just throw like a big fucking
Project X style one.
Yeah. So there was this fella, this DJ there, DJing. His name was DJ Rashers. I was trying to think back because I know why I was one of the first people there. Like I was literally like there's only about two or three people in the house. Next thing, like there was hundreds there, and someone brought someone managed to basically lock us all in, so they closed the gates of the complex, so we're all locked into the complex, and that the guards couldn't get in, and it was just madness. But that was a wicked wild one. I remember fucking DJ Rashers was going till the early hours,
frying it up.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I was thinking, like, yeah, one, obviously we went to college together. Like, we had some good fucking class parties, there was some good sessions going around. But actually, I was thinking more recent when you were talking to me about this. Like, there's probably a bit of recency bias in this, but actually, my stag party there, like, right before lockdown, you know, 3 days in Portugal in the sun, like, having pints for breakfast. Like, it's... like as a kind of thing that you only do like very, very occasionally, like once every how often do you carry on like that? It was fucking superb. Like, and as well, there was a good mix there. And there was the two things that came to my head were that stag weekend, where like that you just had a great fucking group of guys in a fucking lovely spot, drinking beer, singing karaoke, munching on pizzas, just absolutely doing the dog on it for a weekend. But also the weekend we did in Liverpool a couple of years ago was fucking amazing. Like, where basically we swapped being dickheads each night and getting that bladder face drunk. Like, that was really good as well. But yeah, I'd have to say, like, if you're talking about great sessions, I'd go with my stag. Like, and I know there's a lot of recency bias in that, but fuck me, man. Like, it really stands out as 3 days of non-stop boozing, to be fair, but fucking just non-stop crack as well. Like, there wasn't a bad 10 minutes in that 3 days. Like,
no, it was good camaraderie. Like, there was I don't know. I think everyone just got along on it. Everyone was kind of looking out for each other as well, because you obviously hear these stories of like stags, especially where like lads get thrown into a river or whatever, like, you know, and, you know, I shouldn't be laughing, because there has been like very like bad outcomes from these events where people just don't give a shit, like, and they think it's funny that to, you know, tie someone to a pole in freezing weather and all this kind of stuff, like, but your wonder is like, it was a good bit of ribbing all around and everyone was having fun, but I don't think it was at the expense of anyone. I think everyone just kind of adult mischief. Yeah, scallywaggy.
Yeah, the worst thing that happened to me wasn't even like the fact that the lads put me in an Everton jersey with Radker on the back of it. The worst thing that happened to me was my brother Mark, who's been on the podcast, asking me for my belt at 5 o'clock in the morning walking back to the hotel. And I just, for some reason, took my belt off, gave it to him, and he fucked it over a ditch into someone's backyard. So, like, yeah, you know,
that's tame enough, like.
It's tame enough. It was tame in terms of, like, fucking taking a piss out of me. Like, I got off lightly.
Tommy, we have a good stag there. Literally, the last thing we did before lockdown.
Yeah. Literally, the weekend before the lockdown, it went down a stag in Galway, like. Yeah, it was a good...
Yeah.
As I was saying... The lads were joking, like, as in it was our last, the last kind of hoolie, like, we really went out with a fucking...
it's as if we knew what was coming, like, yeah, so we'd go on a big stand, like.
Yeah.
But one of the nights really stands out to me, whereby we ended back, like, so we finished getting away in the pubs, and we were flying it, really, and... We ended up back in the apartment, and we put on the television had YouTube on, like, built into it, and all of us just like took turns putting on songs on YouTube and playing on this like tiny little television, like, but you know, it was tops off, like standing on chairs and tables and singing our hearts out in the morning, like. It was actually very fortunate that we had booked up like pretty much the entire block of apartments there, because we were sold out.
Roaring,
like, you know. Like, there was a few lads in the group trying to get a fucking few winks sleep, like.
Yeah.
And we were roaring, like. But yeah, like all a load of trad tunes came out, and it was just excellent. And actually, that's what I'm really looking forward to now, like, coming into next year now. I think actually because of COVID-19, a load of weddings, DJ yours included, have been postponed. But it means that there's going to be I think next year I'm going to have about maybe like 8 or 9 weddings next year. And probably over 10 now, from, let's say, the end of lockdown onwards to the end of next year. So,
you mightn't even have time for your own one.
Yeah, no. I'm double booked, actually. Yeah. I'm gonna appear for the second half of my one. My father's going to stand in for me for the for the wedding bit.
I tell you what you touched on there, that actually is something I hadn't even fucking thought of throughout lockdown. And all of a sudden, I miss it more than is rationally possible, is a trad session.
Yeah.
Fucking hell, what I wouldn't give for an old Bowron accordion and fiddle to be in the corner there, and they were just jigging away.
Yeah, but like, even, I think even like trad session is one thing, like, you know, and like that's excellent to have in a pub when you're, you know, but like even a sing song, you know, in terms of like,
yeah.
You know, like that night there where there was just a bit of YouTube on, and, you know, and you don't even need that. You can just fucking, some lad in the corner just can start singing away, crooning away to his heart's content, and everyone joining in, and you only know about a third of the words, but you kind of struggle on for the whole thing, like, you know, and then you pipe up loud for the chorus, like, you'd miss that, though. Miss that, all right, like, you know.
If my editing skills are any good, I'll be after putting a bit of background trap music on for this segment. But I highly doubt it. I'm sorry to the listeners for letting you down. But Yeah, I think, Jesus, I actually haven't timed this at all. So I reckon we're gone for about an hour 10, an hour 15 there. So
grand.
We'll start wrapping it up. Yeah, the usual shit, lads. You know the story. Support food banks. Support your local food bank. If there's any charities worth giving a whack, give them a whack. Charlie's young fella is still doing a triathlon, so or an Ironman. So if you go to Charlie's Lockdown Ironman or something like that, GoFundMe, you'll come across it. And yeah, look after the shop local, look after the likes of Kyrie's Antiques and all them fellas from Monday. Lads, any parting words for the listeners? Tommy?
Session on, I suppose.
Keep the head going.
Keep the numbers down. Yeah.
The point up, the numbers down.
Cheers.
Boys. Yeah. Shop local.
Shop local. Not more to be said than that. Enjoy your week, lads, and we'll be back next week with some more Shy Talk.
Shop local.
Drink local. Antique local.
Speaking of drinking local, I need to get it.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.